Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you transcribed under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, starring Joseph Schildkraut in the title role, is written by Peter Berry, entitled The Transgression of Yudel Kinderschein.
I am Chaim Eglevsky, a citizen of Graznia. Industrious, honest, intelligent, and not at all bad-looking. I am possessed of an even temper, a pious nature, and much tolerance for my fellow creatures. The only thing that I can't tolerate is a man who is better than I am, which is why I so thoroughly detested my competitor, Yudel Kinderschein. He was a gifted merchant and a whirlwind success at the kitchen doors of both Jew and Gentile from Graznia to Lemberg. But success is like a fire in a forest of dry trees. The wider it ranges, the hotter it burns. It was not enough that Yudel Kinderschein was up before daylight crying his wares. Yudel Kinderschein cried them in rhyme.
Cook. Pots for baking your kiddish night hens, trinkets and jewelry, ladies and men's, hairpins and razors, bright, shiny and new, and a glass for your tea when the day's work is through.
Such poetry he could spout for hours, making it out of his head with no sign of effort and outselling me everywhere 20-1. Since I had been a peddler when Yudel was still in his cradle, I objected to this deeply. And one Shabbos morning in Graznia, I stopped him on the street and told him to his face.
If I've disturbed you, Chaim Eglevsky, I'm deeply sorry.
Oh, spare me. All I ask is that you promise to limit yourself to fair and reasonable competition. Do I get a promise or don't I?
Such a promise is unnecessary.
Indeed. Indeed. Then stand warned, my soft-spoken friend.
Why?
I shall consult Rabbi Benjamin about the ethics of one peddler taking the bread from the mouth of another.
Such consultation, my friend, is likewise unnecessary.
Not in my opinion.
Chaim.
Enough! If this is war you want, then war you shall have.
Chaim Eglevsky, come back.
For what? Do you want to tell me again how deeply you regret impoverishing me?
No. No, my friend, I want to tell you that I will not be going on the road anymore.
What did you say?
I said I won't be going on the road anymore. I've decided to give it all up.
Do you tell me this with a straight face?
Yes.
On a Shabbos morning?
On a Shabbos morning.
Do you think I'm a fool, or are you trying to make one of me?
If you will listen for only one moment.
Well?
Chaim, I have suddenly discovered that there is a certain tendency for a peddler to, shall we say, exaggerate the value of his goods.
Discovered it? Such a thing is only human.
How sad that people use this lofty word, human, to excuse their basest instincts.
Do you expect me to believe that you would dream of giving up so comfortable a vocation?
Forgive me, my friend, but no vocation that distresses my conscience is comfortable to me.
And peddling distresses your conscience.
Now, Marty, you must understand this.
I do not understand this.
All right, then it doesn't distress yours, Chaim, and therefore you shall have the field all to yourself, Chaim Iglesias.
I was astonished by Kinderschein's decision, but his wife Miriam was staggered.
You decide such a thing without even discussing it with me?
My good wife, can a man discuss whether or not to remain true to his principle?
But you don't.
I have always avoided temptation, and I shall continue to do so.
And you shall also continue to be father of a family, the husband of a wife, and the master of a house, I suppose.
If God is willing, yes, my dear. These are all very good and pious things.
And how, pray tell me, shall these good and pious things exist?
Excuse me, are you maybe referring to money, my dear?
If you will pardon me, I am.
I shall find another way of earning our living. A way in which such things are not likely to happen.
What was that last?
Nothing.
No, don't tell me nothing.
Nothing.
It's always your nothing that's the key to the matter.
Please, Miriam.
But what is this nothing that threatens the roof over our heads?
I have transgressed, Miriam.
You?
I? Listen, last evening,
yes?
Just before the dusk fell over the Lemberg Road, a carriage drove up, a most beautiful carriage.
Yes, yes.
And a lady leaned out of the carriage and asked me the price of the little black combs.
Yes, yes.
What is your price, my good man? She asked me. Then before I knew it, the words had leapt from my mouth like a pair of serpents. 8 coppers, lady.
Well? So?
And it was not until she was clattering away down the road, Miriam, that the evil of what I had just done came over me.
You had done an evil?
Mm-hmm. The price of that comb is 4 coppers. 4, my good wife, you hear. But I had asked that lady in the carriage 8 for it. And what's more, taken 8.
Well, what then?
Oh, you ask what then? I'm as ashamed of you as I'm of myself.
I'm sorry if I shame you,
but... The sweat ran from my forehead, let me tell you, as I chased that carriage. But unfortunately, a man cannot overtake a double team of horses.
And fortunately, a lady with a coach and 4 isn't concerned about a few coppers.
Oh, this from you, from my own spouse.
I meant no harm.
Miriam.
But I only ask.
Please.
Could she possibly suffer from the loss of such a little bit of money?
No, she could not suffer. It was not she who had doubled her price. It was myself.
I see.
You see, huh? Do you see?
Yes.
Do you?
Yeah. It only seems to me that, well, she was free to buy the comb or leave it as she chose.
That's not the point. That is not the point, my wife. Please, Miriam, think. Just think a moment. What if the woodcutter or the butcher should double their prices suddenly? How many thousands of people would freeze and starve? I have sinned, Miriam. I have sinned for the first time in all my life. I have done unto others as I would not have them do unto me.
Oh, please, Udall, don't feel so bad.
Go away, my wife. You comfort me.
But so small and evil.
What do you mean, small?
You made a tiny extra profit from a wealthy customer.
What tiny? What?
Such a thing is part of peddling.
Yes, it is. And therefore, let me tell you one thing. Udall Kinderschein is a peddler no longer.
They said he was a hero. They said he was a saint. But I said nothing. I could say nothing. My dislike for him had mounted to a rage that stuck in my throat like a fishbone. In September, his household had been warm and well-fed. Wife and children, plump and rosy. By December, they were pale and haggard, and when I'd see Miriam shivering in the marketplace, thin and threadbare, my heartbeat pounded my reason to shreds. I could imagine her days filled with the whining of hungry children, and her nights...
Udall?
Yes?
You're still awake?
Yes. And you?
Yes.
It's late.
I'm worrying.
I'm worrying, too. I'm considering how easily a person may fall into wicked ways.
Yes, Udo.
There are so many pitfalls for the righteous, Miriam.
Yes, Udo.
And I worry how a man shall manage to get through this world unsullied. What do you worry about, my wife?
About how we shall manage to get through the winter alive.
One morning, a week before Hanukkah, old Mendel Kotler, blessed be his soul, was found half buried in a 3-foot drift of snow in the dooryard of the synagogue. He had served the congregation for 40 years in the capacity of shamus, and there was considerable grief at his passing. Then, 3 days after the funeral, Rabbi Benjamin called a meeting of the elders.
We shall not fail to miss him or to mourn him, but meanwhile, life goes on, and as Mendel would surely agree, a synagogue must have a shamus. In short, we are here to appoint his successor.
If I may speak, Rabbi Benjamin.
The floor is yours, Yasha Seligman.
Thank you. Let me say that a shamus is set somehow above his fellows and should therefore be a man to be looked up to, an admirable man, a righteous man.
Whom exactly do you have in mind?
A man of every admirable quality, a Jew of unquestionable righteousness, our suffering brother, Yudel Kinderschein.
Yudel Kinderschein. I was afraid of this.
Afraid? Surely you cannot think him unfit.
That's neither here nor there. His name has been suggested and must be approved or disapproved by this body. What say you to Yudel Kinderschein, Avram Ehrenberg?
I say yes, unconditionally.
And you, Elira Fales?
I say yes, absolutely.
And you, Chaim Eglefsky?
I say no, unconditionally and absolutely.
Indeed. Do you question his fitness, Chaim?
I question everything about
him. Hold on, Eglefsky. Let's not be too fast about questioning others.
No personalities, if you please.
Where are personalities? It only so happens that I bought a watch from this peddler, last Tisha B'Av, that starts on the average of 3 times a day.
The watch is perfectly good. You only have to give it a shake occasionally.
A shake, indeed. I bought a watch, not a lulav.
Let us stick to our business. Would you be good enough to tell us your objections, Eglefsky?
I could say that Kinderschein makes my blood boil.
Yeah?
That he antagonizes me and sets my teeth on edge. But such objections, I suppose, aren't really valid.
No, they're not.
You agree that he is a religious man?
Yes, yes.
Hi, Maglevsky.
Yes.
Surely you must be able to tell us at least one imperfection in a person you detest so intensely.
I would if I could.
Am I to conclude, then, that he's perfect?
As far as I know.
Morally and ethically?
How can I say otherwise?
Think, Eglefsky, think.
I'm thinking.
You men are without sin or blemish.
I'm afraid that he is.
Oh? Then, if you can tell me nothing definite against him, I must leave the matter up to a vote.
I can tell you nothing definite against him. But I can tell you this.
What?
And I know it, though I don't know how I know it. In spite of all this talk of his righteousness and his virtues, Yudel Kinderschein is not fit to be shamus of Graznia.
But that night, he was elected shamus of Graznia. It was Yasha Seligman who was delegated to bring him the news.
Heaven has smiled on you.
I, Yudel Kinderschein, a servant of the synagogue.
And no man could be better suited for the task, I think.
Yudel.
Yeah.
Did you hear what Yasha Seligman said?
Yes.
It was amusing to see how certain people, not to mention any names, Chaim Eglevsky tried to stand in Yudel's way.
Chaim? What did he say?
But nothing, nothing worthy of mention.
What did he say?
It had very little effect after I stated unconditionally that you were a completely righteous person. Well, I must be getting home sooner or later. Good night, then, and...
Yasha Seligman.
Yes?
What did he say?
Who?
Chaim Eglevsky.
Oh, it was unimportant.
Still, what was it?
Why bother?
Curiosity.
Personally, I shrugged it off.
Yes?
And so did everyone else. But what he said was, in spite of all the talk of your righteousness and virtues, you are not fit to be Shamus of Grasnia.
Oish.
That was Saturday evening. Around midnight that night, Miriam walked to find Yudel's place beside her empty. She was about to leap up when she saw his figure shadowed against the clean, bright shine of the wintry moonlight.
Yudel?
Yeah?
What are you doing standing there in the window?
Thinking.
About what?
Nothing, nothing.
Yudel, don't tell me nothing.
Go to sleep.
Yudel!
Miriam, please. Go to sleep.
But the next night, it was Yudel who woke his wife.
Miriam?
Yeah?
Miriam, what did he mean?
Oh, Chaim's jealous of you, Yudel. It's only that he's jealous.
I'm not at all sure that it is only that he's jealous.
What do you mean?
It hasn't occurred to you.
Occurred to me?
Yes, that he may know about... it?
What?
My transgression on the Lemberg Road.
Oh, Yudel.
Now, look, he's a peddler, isn't he, Miriam? The same lady in the same carriage may have written up to him, mayn't she? He could have offered her a little black tocome, and she could have said that she's already bought one. But I can hear him saying, 8 copper? Who charged you such a price, lady? Well, I'm easy to describe. In a twinkling of an eye, Iglevsky knew my guilt. That's why he says I am not fit to be Shamus of Grasnia.
Oh, Yudel, please listen
to me.
And
you want to know something else, my good wife? Huh? You want to know something else? Eglevsky may be right.
Right? Why, he has worse guilt himself 10,000 times over.
So what? What? What if he does? A peddler takes his guilt only into the marketplace, Miriam, but a Shamus takes his guilt into the house of the Lord.
On Monday night, Yudel Kinderschein appeared before Rabbi Benjamin and the elders.
You were praised most eloquently, my son. Your election was practically unanimous, and I welcome you to what I trust shall be a rewarding task, spiritually rich and fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shamus. Yudel.
Rabbi, I have something to say, something I must say. I must say that I'm a needy man and that I know in my heart what fairness and kindness this congregation has shown me. I must say that, yes, and I must tell you that I shall appreciate it deeply and always.
Well spoken.
Pardon me, but I have just a little more to speak. I also know in my heart that I must show the congregation an equal amount of fairness and of kindness.
And I'm sure you shall whenever the need exists.
Unfortunately, Rabbi, the need exists now.
Hmm?
Yes, I must tell you that the least kindly amongst you was the most correct.
What do you mean?
I mean, Chaim Eglevsky was right. I'm not fit to be Shamus.
He told his story then fully and completely, and the tears rolled down his cheeks as he described the lady in the carriage, the little black comb, and the 4 extra coppers. For my part, I was stunned by his childishness
and I glanced around the room to make sure that the other elders were as embarrassed as I was to have a grown man recite such a silly story in public. When at last he halted, there was a long, dead silence, which Yasha Zeligman was the first to break.
Well, Yudel?
Yes?
That's all, Yudel?
Yes.
I see. It was very good of you to tell us.
Well, there was no choice for me, Zeligman. I had to.
Well, I can't believe that it's a matter of very great importance.
Huh?
It wasn't a theft. It surely wasn't a swindle. As a matter of fact, I'm amazed.
If you don't mind.
Yes, Rabbi Benjamin.
I would like to render judgment in relation to such a problem in ethics as this.
Oh, of course, Rabbi.
It is obvious that Yudel Kindershein committed what he knows to have been a very grave wrong.
Yes. Yes, Rabbi, just so.
He deprived a woman of her substance selfishly and heedlessly.
It was altogether a matter of 4 coppers, Rabbi.
And since when is there a moral difference between 4 coppers and 1,000?
I'm sorry.
Or a million?
Oh, I'm sure the rabbi knows best.
Yudel Kindershein?
Yes, Rabbi Benjamin.
You must understand that this revelation has put you in an entirely new and different light.
Yes. Yes, Rabbi Benjamin, yes.
And therefore, I have altered my decision.
Your decision?
Yes. I cast no vote in Yudel's election, but in so serious a moment as this, I cannot refrain from expressing myself for the record.
Oh, your pardon, Rabbi, but I insist on the right to change my vote in keeping with yours.
I too, absolutely.
I wish unconditionally to change mine at once.
Peace. It is your privilege to change your votes as you please, but I hereby cast my own in confirmation of the former action of this body.
What do you mean?
I mean I vote for the election of Yudel Kindershein.
Yudel's face was practically indescribable. Let me say that he looked both stunned and overjoyed, delighted and disbelieving. Indeed, he scarcely seemed to hear as he was instructed in his duties, and he departed like a man in a dream. The elders in silence followed, one by one. I was alone with Rabbi Benjamin as he gathered his papers together, took off his spectacles, and crossed to put out the lamp.
Rabbi?
Yeah?
I want to talk to you.
Oh? Are you going to reprimand me for voting for Kindershein?
Reprimand? Who am I to reprimand a rabbi? In fact, as little as I have liked him in the past, I'm no longer honestly sorry for Yudel's good luck.
You are fortunate. It's ill for a man's soul to be sorry for the good luck of another.
I'm very badly confused.
Oh?
You said that the wrong he committed was a very grave matter. You said that he had been heedless and selfish. You deplored it before all the elders, and then, without warning, suddenly you cast your vote for him.
My dear Iglevsky, the confession he made was trifling, unimportant.
Then why didn't you say so?
And if I had?
He could have remained the blameless and virtuous saint.
Indeed, he could have, but I shouldn't want a blameless saint for the Shamus of Grozny.
No. No? Why not?
Very simply, my son. It isn't good that a man should think of himself as blameless. Such a character runs the risk of being intolerant. He judges harshly, forgives slowly, and, if you ask me, is happiest in his own self-righteous company. It's a cold, inhuman attitude for any man to hold, but for a shamus, it is unthinkable. A shamus, you see, must deal with people, and like anyone else who deals with people, serves them, teaches them, leads them, he should have a skeleton or two in his own closet to help him understand and love his fellow men in their small, endless, natural imperfections. Now, do you understand a little?
No. Maybe.
They say that only God can be perfect, but the Shamus of Grozny must be human. Oh, I had a desire to tell him he'd really done no wrong to comfort and reassure him, but I knew it would be unwise in the end for him and for the congregation.
Yes, I think I was right, Chaim Iglesky. A Yudel Kinderschein needs his transgression.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Jacob Cohen, Rabbi of Temple Sinai and Dean of the Graduate School of the University of Judaism.
The hero of our story, with his exaggerated moral scruples, must not be judged by mere practical standards. Otherwise, we would dismiss him as a mere eccentric. Is it not, however, an indictment of all of us that we can be quite tolerant of the eccentricities of genius when the genius is a painter or a musician, an actor or a mathematician, and even accept these eccentricities as an evidence of his genius, and yet fail to realize that saintliness, too, may be a type of genius. As the great musician possesses sensitivities beyond the normal to harmonies and disharmonies which move him to ecstasy or subject him to tortures, so I would say a truly saintly character is endowed with that moral sensitiveness which induces reactions to good and evil of which we, the common run of men, are incapable. The basis of the democratic dogma that all men are equal lies precisely in the fact that no man is exactly equal to another in wisdom or in virtue. Only in our ignorance and imperfection are we equal. We can all learn more than we already know. We can all do better than we have already done. Not only the shamus, the servant of the synagogue, as the rabbi puts it, but also the servants of the state, and the state that would serve mankind must search with scrupulous concentration their own histories to find the tie that binds them in compassion and humility to all their fellow men. Then, hand in hand, we can help one another to advance on the long road to freedom and peace.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Our eternal life drama today, The Transgression of Yudel Kinderschein, starring Joseph Schildkraut, was written by Peter Berry. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. The cast included Shepard Mencken, Maya Gregory, Lou Merrill, Griff Barnett, Jan Arvan, William Euler. The music was written by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Your announcer, Don Stanley. This has been an NBC Radio Network production, transcribed and directed by Andrew C. Love. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.